Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You're listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs around and have awesome customer service from my own experience. Use the coupon code MMOREPORTER at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD on top of the 1TB hard drive that comes with your system. By Audible, hands down, the best audiobook service in the entire universe. Seriously, if you have any sort of commute or just prefer to listen to your books, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOREPORTER and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. If you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can find more information at gamediplomat.com/donate. Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the Happy Hearthstone podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I am joined once again by the illustrious, the illuminous, the Illuminati, Scott Lance.
Hello.
Hello. So, Mr. Grumpy over there today.
I'm grumpy. Oh, I didn't mean to sound grumpy.
I think maybe you're just sick, I think, right?
I am sick, but I'm trying to power through.
All right. Well, thank you for being here, Scott. You're a hero. So Scott is coming here, like we said, a couple episodes ago. He's going to be on the show every other episode, doing the more strategy stuff. This week, had to have him here because it's the authoritative review of all the neutral cards in Black Rock Mountain, which I'm really excited about. But before we get into that, Scott, actually, let's talk about why we're happy this week. Why are you happy?
I am happy that Black Rock Mountain is out. It's pretty cool.
All right, that's a good reason. Yeah. What has been your favorite fight so far?
That's a good question. Certainly the wife fight, I think it was with Emperor Thorison. That one was pretty entertaining. I thought the diversity of the fights and the cleverness of the fights has so far managed to edge out Naxx. And Naxx is pretty good, too.
Yeah, I do, too. Like, I actually feel like I've learned more lore about this dungeon from Hearthstone than I have from when I played it 10 million times in World of Warcraft. Yeah. Like, the stuff like the Brood Affliction with the Cro-Magus fight, where it's giving you cards for the different colors, and Veil Straws, where it's powering you up every turn, right, giving you cards that you have to spend. It's a really cool, like, thematic that ties into what happened.
Yeah.
Although I'm guessing that Lord Victor Nefarious was not quite as goofy as he is in Hearthstone.
Yeah, they made Kel'Thuzad and then now him pretty goofy in these encounters.
Yeah. It was quite funny, though, the one when you right after you kill Ragnaros, right? I think Blackrock Spire was the next wing. Uh-huh. And it's like, greetings, Slayer of Ragnaros. Hey, what are you doing here? He's like, Ragnaros is already dead. Why are you here? Nothing's happening here. Move on.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
All right. I agree. I've actually been really happy with all the fights, and the mechanics are really fun. All right. My reason to be happy is long this week, Scott, because I'm going to surprise you with something. What? So I am happy that Scott donated to the show. Even after our talk in our last episode that Scott was on, I was going to buy the Black Rock Mountain with gold instead of real money. Just because I had a lot of gold and I wanted to spend less money on this game than I already have. But Scott talked me into it, or basically bribed me into it, I guess you could say. Is that fair to say, Scott?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, Scott bribed me by saying, you know what? I will donate $25 to the show if you promise to use it to buy as many packs as you would have if I hadn't bought Black Rock Mountain with gold. That was a fair deal. I was happy to take that. It's actually the first donation to Happy Hearthstone, so thank you, Scott.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And as I opened the packs, I kept track of what I got for your $25 donation, Scott. I want to tell you, I got 45 new cards. Nice. I'm not going to list them all, but the coolest ones, I think. I got a golden Light of the Naru.
Oh, yeah.
A golden Implosion.
Nice.
Golden Stone Splitter Trog. And the best golden, a Piloted Shredder.
Ooh.
So you get double gold.
Yeah, and Light of the Naru you do as well, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And I also got 4 Mistresses of Pain, 5 Shield Maidens, and then I got Mogo... I don't even know how you pronounce Mogar the Ogre. Mogar the Ogre?
Yeah, probably that.
All right. So he's not a great legendary, but it's not bad, right? I'm happy. And I think The most valuable card that I got out of it that I'm excited to have is a piloted Sky Golem, because I actually didn't own one of those yet.
And that's the epic one, right? The 6 cost? Yeah.
Yeah, so I was really happy to get that. And 1,500 dust, buddy.
Which is no joke.
Yeah. Dude, that's almost a legendary.
Yeah. That's great.
So thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate that. Because I know there's ads at the front of the show, so people always, at least I assume people are kind of confused why I ask for donations too. I was telling Scott before the show, I just want to tell everyone so everyone's clear. The ads at the front of the show are for MMO Reporter Network, which pays for all of our hosting. We don't actually get money from MMO Reporter, but they host all the files and the websites and all that sort of stuff. And I've actually put a lot of money into Hearthstone, so I've actually been losing money on this show. So I asked for little donations. And what I think would be cool is I would love to get some donations that are dedicated to buying packs. Because this was really fun, and it also helps me build the decks that we do for deck battles a lot better.
Yeah.
Now that I'm getting a lot more of, or like from Scott's pack, like suddenly I have a lot more epics and legendaries. So I would, if you love this show and you want to contribute to it in any way, I would love if you sent a donation. Just mention that you want me to use it to open packs, and I can keep track of what cards and dust I get from each donation and kind of share that info too. But that would just be really helpful, so I could at least break even when I spend all the time on the show. So there you go. There's my poor man's bag. All right. So, but this week we're talking about Blackrock Mountain. All the cards are out except for the last wing has not opened yet by the time we're recording this. But we're going to go ahead and review all of the neutral cards. We've played with all the ones that are out, and we think we have a good enough handle to kind of make judgment calls at this point. So here's the format. It's similar to what we've done before. Each host is going to give our opinion. And we've kind of debated back and forth on some of these before we started recording. And then we, through that, I don't want to say fighting, Scott, it's all good-natured, but debates and questioning and judgments of each other's character and moral aptitude, we've agreed on shared ratings. And we're doing two ratings for each card, the arena score and the constructed score. And it's just what to expect. One rating is the value of that card in arena, and the other one is the value of that card in constructed. We decided to do it that way because we did combo score and base score before, but we think it's really natural, right? You're either going to be using these cards in arena or constructed, so we'll just tell you what we think in each of those two areas, how it works. The scale is 0 to 5. We actually have some examples this time and what each number means. So this is all going to be on the website as well, so you can look at it. I'll just run through these real fast. Scott, sorry, I'm monologuing here. So jump in if anything jumps out.
This is great.
All right, so 0 is just awful. It's unplayable, right? This is like Sacrificial Pact. That's a warlock one that sacrifices a demon and you gain health, or destroy a demon and gain health. Scott's personal favorite punching bag here. Why don't you say your card?
Poison Seeds, man. I hate that card.
Yeah, that's the druid. It's 4 mana, right?
Yeah, it's something. I don't even know how
much
it
is. It's
0 is too much.
Yeah, it destroys all minions, replaces it with 2/2s. It's just no good.
Yeah, it does, to be fair, that it has a play. And all these cards can potentially have a place in some of the PvE battles. But I've never seen a deck.
No, Scott, it's awful and unplayable. Yes. That is our definition. Unplayable.
Unplayable.
Yeah. A score of 1 means it's underpowered, but it could work out. Right, like I think Naturalize is a good example. Like that can work somewhere. Divine Spirit, again, it does work out sometimes. Corruption is a card that I didn't want to be a 1, but Scott helped me see that it is a 1. You won't. Sometimes you'll be happy you have it, but it's pretty unlikely. And 2 is an acceptable backup plan or a niche filler, right? Like Crazed Alchemist, the 2/2 for 2 that swaps health and mana. Or, health and attack of another minion. Or Emperor Cobra, the 2/3 that has Death Touch, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, those are decent cards, right? But it's not the cards that you're excited to get when you're in Arena and you're not building decks around them. Solid Value is 3. That's just Chillwind Yeti, right? You're happy to have that card. Again, you're not building decks around it, but, man, you're happy when that card is on the board on your side.
And to me, those are the essentially the vanilla cards that kind of set the scale.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not War Golem, that's a 7/7 for 7, but you know, up until then on the cost spectrum,
yeah, like Boulder Fist Ogre, maybe.
Exactly, the 6/7 for 6. Yep.
Yeah, and then so 4, this is where we get into the exciting cards, right? This is where if you hear us give a 4, you should perk up in this review. 4 means it's great with lots of upside. So I think Knife Juggler is the best example. Animal Companion as well. Because, man, when you get that 4/4 with Taunt for 3, you are so happy.
Oh, yeah.
And then 5 is very rare. If we have a 5, it means we love this card with Reckless Abandon. It's so good, you always have to play it. And this is like Dr. Boom, essentially, right? Where everyone just kind of agrees that, yeah, it doesn't really even matter what kind of deck you're building. This guy is almost always in there.
And I don't know if Josh would agree with this, but I would have almost put Sludge Belcher in here because I think I have chosen to put Sludge Belcher in even more decks than Dr. Boom.
What? All right. Yeah. So are you tossing Sludge Belcher even in like aggro decks?
I don't think that's crazy because it protects all these things that otherwise just fall over at the lightest breeze.
All right.
Yeah, don't think that's crazy.
So this was Scott in my first arm wrestle, and I think it came to a draw because I had it at 4. Scott wanted it at 5, and we compromised by just throwing it out the list entirely.
Yeah. I 4.5 is actually pretty 4.5, reasonable, but
that's
we're not
true.
Doing that. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not doing points because that just, it gets messy, right?
Yeah.
We're making a stand. It's either a 4 or a 5 or it doesn't exist. There you go. All right, so Scott, do you want to just kind of recap what the adventure set is?
Yeah, so this is the second one that Blizzard's done. They come in 5 wings. Each wing is independently, I think, $7 or 700 gold apiece, unless you buy a bunch at once, at which point you can reduce the cost to $5 a wing in bulk. But anyway, yeah, they come with PvE content where you get to play against a series of battles that kind of have their own personality and break the normal rules of Hearthstone. Some their decks often don't follow the rules, sometimes use cards that are better than real cards, but they all have some kind of interesting gimmick. And perhaps more importantly, as you beat those missions, that you get these predetermined cards. So an interesting thing about it is, well, you do have to play a few games to unlock them. You are guaranteed to get a certain number of cards. And the sort of card per cost ratio isn't quite as good as going out and buying packs. But when I look back to Naxx, I circled back on Naxx recently, and I was like, man, there's a lot of rock stars in here that continue to be in a wide variety of decks. And $25 is kind of a little steep, but I mean, these things provide the cornerstone of a lot of decks, and it's a lot of fun to play through. So, you know, Blackrock Mountain is more the same of that sort of thing. There are, let's see, this set I think has 31 cards stretched out over the 5 wings. And the cards do come with rarity. There are basics, rares, There are commons, rares, and legendaries. And rarity doesn't really matter because you're getting them all, so it doesn't affect how hard they are to get. But for legendary, it does affect how many you can put in your deck. The rarity does matter in arena mode. Because, you know, obviously the legendary cards will get offered to you less often, whereas the common cards you will tend to see a lot more in arena. And then the last thing it matters for is when you're crafting golds. The legendary golds are obviously, and for that matter, the rare golds are going to be more expensive to craft than the common golds. And the only way to get the golds from these sets is to craft them using dust.
Yeah. So are you crafting any gold? Just before we get into it, is there any one of these cards you think is worth crafting gold?
I could see the answer being yes. There haven't been any that I felt motivated to craft yet, although the dust hasn't quite settled. I will say, so to speak, I did back in Naxx, I just recently crafted my second Sludge Belcher. I had one crafted a long time ago, and I did craft a second. Let's see. I crafted a gold Kel'Thuzad too. I'm trying to remember.
Doesn't bring cards back as gold, does he?
No, I don't think he does. I must not have. No, it's not. Sorry, it was Dr. Boom. Not. Never mind.
Yeah.
I used the heck out of Kel'Thuzad quite a bit. I also did the spider that we disagree, the Haunted Creeper that I kind of evaluated differently. I had him on the high side, but I've got a soft spot for crafting golds of cards that summon other cards. Just because you get multiple pieces of gold art and animation for your price.
I could actually see Gang Up on Rogue being an exciting gold card, because that makes 3 copies of a card. If it makes 3 golden copies of a card, that could be cool.
Yeah, that's true. And that'd be a pretty bad way to go when you're playing, you know, when you're like rogue, mill rogue, you know, you're trying to mill somebody out, and it's just all these gold, cold light oracles keep coming at you.
Yeah, just taunt you too because it's golden murlocs, and you're like,
Yeah.
really, murlocs? Ugh.
Yeah, I'm not sure gang up to where my dust would go, but I hear you.
Is a fun deck.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump straight into the review. We're going to do these cards one at a time, each give our opinion, give a score, and then move on. And so this week, just a reminder, this is just neutral. I believe we're going to do it in alphabetical order, or what is this order? Matt, crazy order? Oh, it's
The
cost order.
cost order.
Yeah, it's cost order. Okay, we're doing it in cost order. And we're going to do all the class cards in 2 episodes from now. We're going to do a deck battle next episode, and then Scott and I will review the class cards after that. All right, let's jump into it. The very first one, not getting off on a high note, Dragon Egg. It's a one cost, got to give it that, but it is an O2 minion with text that says, whenever this minion takes damage, summon a 2/1 whelp. And Scott, I didn't realize this when we were reviewing it. It is a rare. This is a rare card. You're
Yep.
supposed to be excited when this pops up in Arena. The payoff is so weak, right? A 2/1 is super easy to deal with. You have to put in a ton of effort to get more than one, right? You could probably get one of these pretty easy. But then you're getting a 2/1 for one, and you had to use a trick to get it? Like, no way. I am off this. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm the same way. First of all, if you're using things like whirlwind type effects to get two things out of it, well, the problem is the second charge of that gives you your
Gonna
second
kill
whelp is
it.
going to kill the first whelp you brought out. So what the heck is that? The one card I could think of that, well, I guess it's two actually, Inner Rage and Cruel Taskmaster would turn this thing into a 2/1, and then a 2/1 would pop out of it. So I'm like, okay, that's not so bad, but that's like one lukewarm combination to make it not horrible. I mean, like with Nurbin Egg, I can list off a bunch of cards that make it really serviceable. I
Yeah.
can't do that for this thing. That's all I've got. That's the only decent combo I can think of.
Yeah, and even that combo works better if you have Nerubian Egg instead of Dragon Egg.
Well, I. Yeah, because you get a two, or sorry, you get a 4/4 out of it. But at least using that combo here, you can get a 2/1 out of it, and then you can attack with it that, you know, the turn that you put the plus attack on it, and then you can get another whelp out of it. So you kind of ended up getting 3 2/1 minions out of it is one way of looking at it. But again, it's a very limited circumstance, and there's only two different cards in the game that kind of make that decent at all.
Yeah. All
And
right.
you're right,
So,
Nurubian Egg is, I mean, it's at least on par with it, and it excels in so many other situations.
yeah, I think I would be tempted to say, and this may be crazy, Scott, I'd be tempted to say that I would rather have a 4/4 than 3 2/1s.
Yeah, it's reasonable.
Yeah. So even like best case scenario for me on this is I would rather have a different card. All right. I'm going all out extreme 0 for arena score. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think you should pick it in Arena ever, really.
I mean, should we give it something for constructed? Because there is technically one combo that exists for it.
Yeah, if you were going all in on, you know, Inner Rage and Cruel Taskmaster type effects, and you didn't want them for the other cards in your deck, but for some reason they were there to help the Dragon Egg, I guess. It just would keep it at a 0 range. It's still well below average, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, I agree. Next one, Blackwing Technician. This is a 3-cost, 2/4 with a battle cry. If you're holding a dragon, gain +1/+1. So, what do you think?
I personally am underwhelmed with this thing. I think even if you're in a dragon deck, I guess you'll probably fire it off most of the time, or you'll get the ability most of the time. And a 3/5 for three, I want to be clear, is good. But the problem is that it's a 2/4 if you don't get it. So first of all, if you're not playing a dragon deck, just forget about it. I don't even know why you would run this thing. It's just undercosted. You should just run a vanilla creature instead. Now, if you are playing a ton of dragons, I guess you could put this in, but to me, this is not particularly high impact. It just you're just running a card that will hopefully give you half a mana of additional value, but might give you half a mana of less value. And in that respect, it's kind of like a vanilla creature, which is a small amount of randomness to it.
Yeah, see, I like this card a bit more than you, right? Because the stats aren't awful if you don't get the battle cry. You're only missing one hit point, right? Like a 3-4.
But you should play a spider tank if you don't dragon.
Right, yeah. So I agree it shouldn't be in a non-dragon deck. But when you're playing it in a dragon deck, getting a 3-5 for 3 is really good, right? Because that's a Ascension Shieldmaster without taunt.
Right.
For one mana less?
Yeah. And to be clear, it's got like half a mana of it, or, you know, one stat point of additional value if you have the dragon, but that's the if. And so what are you going to do? Are you going to hold your Nefarian in your hand that you can't play for 6 turns just to give this thing half a mana of additional value?
No, I think with a dragon deck, I think it's more, you're not that you didn't mulligan your dragons. It's that you're likely to have drawn a dragon at that point. It's going to be sitting in your hand anyways because you can't play Nefarian. So at least he's serving some purpose.
Yeah, and I was being a little unfair when I said that. I mean, if you're playing things like Dragon Consort and Twilight Drake and Azure Dragon, and, you know, or these kind of things, those are actually good mid-price dragons that you should have in your hand, and you can cast the, you know, next turn or the turn after anyway.
Yeah, because there's some good dragons out there, which we're going to be talking about, like that Dragonkin Sorcerer. What?
Yeah, that thing's nutty. Yeah.
All right, so let's get down to scores. What do you say for Arena?
I put this as a 2 because if you don't have a dragon, it's below average, and you need enough dragons in your deck for this thing to kind of pull above average. So I just can't go higher than a 2, personally.
Yeah, I agree. I would even be tempted to do, like, I could be talked into a 1, but it's a decent body, right? It'll usually trade with at least something and stick. So, yeah, 2 seems fine to me. Maybe a little higher on Constructed, 3?
Yeah, and that's the thing. For Constructed, I'd put it about average. In my mind, it's just the tiniest bit higher than a vanilla creature, and I would put vanilla creatures at a 3. But I don't think this is enough better than a vanilla creature to warrant a 4, because you're still running that risk you're just going to get a 2-4. Like, if you top deck it later in the game, you're not going to be holding a dragon.
Yeah, and the big thing for me is its limited upside, right? The highest value it's going to have is slightly better stats, right?
Right,
it's not
right.
going to hop in and destroy something big on its way in and still leave a body. Like, at best, you're just getting some efficient stats.
Right, and as we go into the next card, it'll be an interesting comparison point, because there's a lot of similarities between this card and the next one we're going to cover, but this one, at most, can only be activated once. And I think that, you know, that means the ceiling isn't particularly high, and luckily the floor is not particularly low, and that's kind of why I see it as, like, a vanilla creature with just a little bit of stretch up or down.
Yeah, makes sense to me. All right, let's jump into the next one. Dragonkin Sorcerer, a 4-cost, 3-5, with dragon, we should specify, and it says, whenever you target this minion with a spell, gain +1/+1.
There we go. Yes.
Yeah, so you're loving this card?
Certainly a lot more, yeah. You know, it's sort of off the vanilla scale by the same amount, which is half a mana. Except that, you have to target it with a spell. And it's unclear to me how many spells, because this, I mean, it's not even another minion, right? There's some minions that can target your stuff, but that won't trigger this guy. So, yeah. And there may be a little bit of red herring here where it looks like it can be activated more than it actually will be, because I don't know how many of these things you're actually going to put in your deck. But I like that it is repeatable, it is under your control, and you can build a deck that can take advantage of it a lot more. And that since most spells that you would target it with are going to buff it, this buffs it up even more, which says if you were going to, I mean, making a 3-5 bigger is already kind of cool. Yeah. Making 3-5 bigger and then giving another +1/+1, so it's really a 4-6 getting bigger. Yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, especially in like Priest and Paladin, which is running a lot of good buffs that you want to be targeting anyways, like Power Word Shield on this guy just over and over is going to be awesome.
Yeah. Or throwing Blessing of Kings or even Blessing of Wisdom on there is a card that I tend to run a lot. I
mean, Blessing,
it's just like a lot of free value.
Oh, yeah. All right, so I'm pretty on board too. I mean, because it is Shield Master stats by itself, right? So you're just giving up essentially taunt
right
on the Shield Master for this potential that gets really big. The one thing I will say is it does feel a little bit like a trap to me. I'm always nervous about cards like this because you have to put spells on it, and it's text. That means if they have a cheap way to silence it, you're like, they get so much value out of a silence effect on this guy.
That's true in that they would wipe both the effect of the card you targeted with and the plus one, but look, man, he's still almost a vanilla creature by itself, right? He's still a 3/5 for four, which is just barely off the vanilla scale.
Yeah, that's
So
true.
if they're wasting a silence, especially if it was like the Power Word Shield where you're drawing a card, or Blessing of Wisdom, where the way I play it, I'm basically drawing the card right back right away. You're not even really down a card, and a lot of times them burning a silence effect, they did either burn a card or some real meaningful stats on a card.
That's true. Yeah, it's still a solid body without it.
Yeah, so I'm not too worried about the silence thing.
All right. So, what do you, for Arena? Is it, it's kind of similar to the last one. It's kind of a vanilla creature, almost like a three.
Yeah, I find him, in my mind, he's a little easier to trigger in an arena deck because you're going to have more spells that target minions. I tend to see more of those flow through than dragons. Now, we'll wait until the dust settles and we can look at how many dragon cards are being offered in arena. But if it's really an even distribution across the four different, or five, if you include basic set, different sets of cards we have, probably won't be too many dragons, but there are a lot of spells in there that target.
Yeah. All right,
So
and
yeah, I give him three.
Constructed's got to go a little more right, because there's some cool combos with this guy.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd probably put him at a four, especially because it's repeatable and you can build a deck that really takes advantage of it. And
Yeah.
it's got dragon synergy to boot.
Yeah. Did you know the Dragon Egg doesn't even give you the dragon? Like, it's not even considered a dragon. Because I looked back, I was like, oh, we should have given credit for that. And I was like, oh, it's not even considered a dragon, even though it's a dragon egg? Come on.
Yep.
That card
And
is.
I think it cranks out dragons, but that doesn't do you any good because all the things that hinge
Yeah.
off of dragons are in your hand, right? Or
Yeah.
like casting them cheaper later on or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too late at that point.
Yep.
All right. Next card, Hungry Dragon, who is also unsurprisingly a dragon. He's a four cost, 5/6. What? Way off the vanilla scale. Battlecry though, summon a random one cost minion for your opponent. What do you think?
So this plays into a fairly long legacy that they started back in Naxxramas of giving cards additional value at drawbacks that tend to be greater than the value of the benefit they give. So, here you get a 5/6. We should normally be getting a 4/5, right? A 4/5 for four is a Chilwind Yeti. So here you're getting a 5/6 instead, which is an extra 1/1. Well, that's kind of worth one mana.
Yeah.
And it may seem equal that they're giving your opponent a one cost minion, but one cost minions are generally 2/1s or 1/2s, often with upside. Now, if that upside were part of its battle cry, well, that's a good thing for you because they're not going to get that value. But a lot of them have death rattle effects or, every turn effects like the Young Priestess or cards like that. So in general, your opponent is going to get more value than you out of this. Now, the fact that it's a dragon may actually play in pretty well. And if you, for some reason, have a deck that's set to take advantage of it, if you've got a lot of AoE in your deck, that may be a way to mitigate it. There may be a number of other cards that could be a benefit here. But and if for some reason just getting things out that are above curve faster, if that's your strategy, well, this plays into that strategy. But overall, I don't think this. I think this thing is a slightly higher risk than it is reward. It's also high variance, and if you're trying to build a tight deck, you often want low variance and kind of deterministic play.
Yeah, it's interesting too because the way it works is whatever minion you give them essentially has charge as well, because the very next turn they're going to be able to use that minion.
That's
Like,
right.
I'm just looking through the one cost minions, right? And this is worst case scenario, right? But you're looking at like Northshire Cleric, Clockwork Gnome, Cogmaster, Leper Gnome. I mean, this is not stuff you want to be giving the enemy team. Zombie Chow. Like, this is all good stuff. I mean, it's likely that they get a Grimmscale Oracle too, which is like worst case, or Angry Chicken. Hey, you could even give them Dragon Egg. There you go. Yeah, I agree. I think Hearthstone, more than any other card game I've played, has really strong one cost minions, especially one cost class minions. Stuff like what's the worm, the mana worm for mage? Stuff like that, like. There's a lot of one cost minions that can actually have a big effect on the game. So I just don't even want to risk this, right? Like you said, it's 1-1. I mean, the Warlock has this exact same card is in the Pit Lord, but it deals 5 damage to your hero. I think I'd rather take 5 damage than risk giving them a great card.
Well, that's an interesting comparison. I would almost rather have the Hungry Dragon.
Yeah?
But I don't really know that I want either of them.
That's also my point, too, is like, I have the Pit Lord, but I'm not playing him. And I think I would play that over I'd play Hungry Dragon. Just because at least you know what you're getting, right? You can make that choice and be like, I'm opting into this and not, oh, look, they got Northshire Cleric. I'm hosed.
Right. And there are ways to circumvent, at least now in the Demon deck, there are ways to circumvent those Battle Cry effects, those negative Battle Cry effects.
Yeah.
But for this, I don't think there is.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So score, I mean, a 2 for Arena.
Yeah, because I think it's below average.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's still, I mean, it's a good body. And sometimes in Arena, all you need is a big body to win.
It's true. And there are some people that use, like, Venture Co. Mercenary. And, I mean, that's Blizzard purposefully balances cards that are ahead of the vanilla scale on stats with often disproportionately high side effects. Right.
Yeah.
I like in my evaluation, every card where they make the body bigger, to me, the drawback is worth more than the benefit. But the idea is that you can put them in a deck that helps mitigate it. And that's where you can, you know, things get interesting.
Yeah.
But it does mean like in an arena deck where you can't build around it quite the same way that those cards that tend to have less value in arena.
Yeah. And so I think the constructed score should be high. And just to clarify, because we had some discussion about this as we were picking the numbers. The constructed score isn't its value across all constructed decks. Constructed score means how valuable is this card in the deck that wants it most.
Yeah.
Right? So if it was a highly aggressive card, right? The constructed score is how good is it in a highly aggressive deck? Not, hey, how good is it in aggressive decks and control decks? It's just where you want it. So in this case, in a deck that wants this sort of thing, like you said, with the mind control and stuff like, Mind Control Technician? Is that his name?
Yeah.
I think it can be pretty good in Constructed.
Yeah, that's a good call. The Mind Control Technician is an example of something you can use. Priest also has some cards that can steal low-cost minions, and hey, if they didn't have one before, they will after this. So, yeah, there are some possible combos.
All right, so I'd say 4?
Yeah, that works for me.
All right. Cool. Up next, Grim Patron. This was one of the cards we were most excited about before we actually got to play any of it. So I'm curious to see if we're still as excited about it as we were. So this is a 5-cost minion, a 3-3. Whoa, so expensive. What's going on? Whenever this minion survives damage, not takes damage, survives damage, summon another Grim Patron, which is, you know, just the same card. So this is one of those cards you could probably craft gold, because you're going to see a lot of these fill up the board, which could be fun. Yep. But it's so expensive, right? It's 5 cost for a 3-3. You can pay 3 and get a 3-3 with Taunt. I mean, right, you get Wombo Combo Wet Dreams. That's great. But it feels like it's going to be a trap in almost every deck, unless you have ways to reliably proc this for free, right? Because I don't see cards like Enrage and stuff, because that's not freaks. You're using a card to make it happen. I don't know. I'm liking this card less than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. There are a lot of interactions with a lot of cards, but what I hadn't really had in the forefront of my mind is, well, 5 mana to bring it out, and then I need to either do those shenanigans on the same turn, which means I have to be really deep in the game, and there's going to be all sorts of like big things on the board where 3-3s aren't really bullies. They're kind of noise sometimes on the board. Yeah. Or I have to put on the board on, say, turn 5 and then hope it survives the turn, which, again, if the person who casts like Chill Wind Yeti the turn before or something, you know, even a 5 cost the turn before, they can often just like knock out the Grim Patron in one hit and its ability never fired. You need that ability to fire at least once in order for him to break even. And possibly more than once if you're investing your own card and your own mana to try to, you know, it's like one thing if you can throw them at a small creature, kill that small creature, get another Grim Patron, then one activation is definitely enough to make them worth the cost and slightly profitable. But
yeah,
if you're
but
burning
even then, you're ending up with maybe like a 3-1 and a 3-3 for five. I mean, that's even not, that alone isn't great value.
Yeah, but if you knocked out a 2-2 in the process, then okay.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. It's like you started with that 3-1. But my point is, if you're spending your own card and your own mana to lower your own guy's hit points to get another 3-3, then I actually don't know that one activation is enough to make him break even.
Yeah.
And so I expected a lot of just ambient value, you know, like whirlwind type effects in a warrior deck. And I still don't think that's bad. You know, you can throw them behind like an unstable ghoul. They got to go through the ghoul. You get an extra grim patron out of it. Okay, you know, that's not so bad. But I don't think that that's where his power really is. And I haven't seen him used that way all that much. He actually seems to be mostly in decks that are just saving up some cards in hand to flush as a one turn kill or one turn finisher kind of combo that can do, you know, 10, 15, 20 points of damage in a turn by filling the board full of these things and then attacking.
Yeah. So I will say it's a fun card, right?
Yeah.
It is just as much fun as we thought it was going to be. It's just not as effective. So Arena, I mean, one or a two, I mean, I guess in Arena, it's just so hard to make sure it's going to happen. Essentially, for me in Arena, at least, I look at it, it's a 3-3 with taunt, right? Because it just means they have to kill it right away.
Well, they have to kill it if they have something big, and they can't attack it if they have things that are small.
Yeah.
Right? Because if all they have are 1-1s and 2-2s,
oh, that's true.
They're not going to come anywhere near it. So you will, at least in that scenario, get to attack with it the next turn. In fact, you'll probably get to attack their thing. So, I mean, yes, you're right. It's a lightning rod. If they have a way of dealing with it, they will deal with it. But like a lot of cards that are lightning rods, if they don't have a way of dealing with it, then you probably can start to eke out value turn over turn.
Yeah. It's just unlike a lot of lightning rod cards where it's like, well, you better deal with the Whirling Zap-O-Matic or else you're going to lose. This is like, you better deal with it or else I'll actually get decent value for the card.
that's
what you're hoping
true.
For, is you're hoping to not lose value.
Because the Whirling Zap-O-Matic, that's a great analogy, because they're either like burning a direct damage card, in which case like you both spent a cheap card and you're even. But here, a lot of times, like, okay, they run their Chillwind Yeti into it. You spent 5 mana to negate part of their 4 mana card, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good way of looking at it. So I think they balance this thing accordingly. He is certainly capable of some shenanigans in the right deck, but I don't think he's like the dear God, this is insane card that we thought or hoped it might be.
Yeah. So actually, what is his rarity? Is he rare?
He's rare, yeah.
I'm going out there, Scott. I know we have two here. I think it should be a one for Arena.
Yeah, that's fair, because especially since you can't cast them until turn five.
Yeah.
And Arena tends, just because vanilla creatures actually tend to be more powerful than a lot of the synergy-reliant cards in Arena, that means they're probably going to cast something, you know, at the 4 and 5 mana slots that have the bodies that you would expect out of that. And that means that those guys are going to be able to eat this guy up once you drop him on the board. So for Arena, I think you're right. It's probably a bad call.
But Constructed, I think I'm happy to go 4. I mean, let's send it high, because this is fun in Constructed. In the deck that wants him, he is super fun.
In the deck that wants him, he can really do some weight. And, you know, it's, you got to play him with Warsong Commander. I think most of his shenanigans are around that, but there's some unstable ghoul shenanigans and Deathspite shenanigans the turn you drop him down. So yeah, you can still get some stuff done.
And don't forget the combo here. It's almost at the top of the Hearthbone page. Commanding Shout plus Bouncing Blade. What? Fill your whole board board with these guys.
Well, you fill your whole board with 3-1s, not 3-3s.
That's
right?
True.
Because the Bouncing Blade won't start. And the further the board has to be empty.
Oh,
otherwise, as soon as it kills one of your opponents, it stops. So it's fine if they got something with a lot of health on the board. But if they've got like a 2-1... Well, you're probably going to – that Bouncing Blade
that's
is probably
going to
fizzle out pretty fast. So even that's pretty conditional. But even just Commanding Shout and a Warsong Commander lets you – and I've had people do this against me. They just basically throw every single one of them into somebody on my side. They clear out my side. They're left with a side of mostly 3-1s for the next turn, which isn't so bad.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah. Pray they don't have a Whirlwind.
Right, right.
All right, next card, Blackwing Corruptor. Oh, yes. And it's a common, a 5-cost, 5/4, with Battle Cry. If you're holding a dragon, deal 3 damage. This is the reason to build a dragon deck, Scott. This is why dragon decks exist. What do you think?
I think that's pretty dead on. I think there are a couple other cards, like the Consort and Paladin that can make it worth playing dragon decks, at least all put together. But man, this thing's insane. We saw it with this reminds me kind of sort of the Blast Mage from GVG. These are just three targeted damage is really, really good, and it's for only what amounts to a one mana offset. That's really good.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like a cheap fire elemental, right? Which is a shaman class card, but I think we agree on this, Scott. It's one of the best minion cards in the game, right?
Fire elementals. I can't imagine building a shaman deck without it.
Yeah, okay. So this is like a cheap fire elemental with an extra requirement, right? It needs a dragon in hand. But for a dragon deck, I don't think that's going to be hard. I think every dragon deck has to run this. And man, you're going to kill something when you land and then trade with at least one other thing. Such good value.
Yeah. Now, one thing to point out, the more expensive the card is, the harder the condition may be to do the whole if you're holding a dragon thing, right?
Yeah.
Because and this guy is not a dragon himself, which means you put him in a dragon deck and he's one of the cards not contributing to the trigger on the other cards. But it also means that by turn five, you may have already played your Twilight Drake on turn four, for example, or some of your earlier dragons. So it's probably not the biggest thing in the world. Five is still below, the legendaries, and there's a couple other five costs like the Consort. But just be aware that you're starting to get the higher end of the curve, and you may actually, in order to trigger the ability, you may find yourself having to hold on to a dragon that you didn't actually want to hold on to get the ability. Still probably worth it, but it's
Yeah.
making you play suboptimally in other ways in order to get
Yeah, I'm
this
not too
ability.
worried about five. I'd get worried higher because it's like Azure Drake is still five. I mean,
Yeah.
the only two worthwhile ones I think are the Fairy Dragon and Twilight Drake that are below five. Because I mean, you aren't going to be running a Young Dragonhawk. I don't think
No.
in a dragon deck.
Yeah, it's very true.
All right, so let's say so. Obviously, in Arena, it's going to be less, right? Because we agree that outside of a dragon deck, it's a expensive card with bad allocated stats.
Right, yeah. So it's like a mana off on a vanilla curve, and it's got higher power or higher attack than health, and I prefer higher health than attack.
Yeah, because it's the same as the Lost Tall Strider stats wise, which is one
Yeah.
mana cheaper, and I don't even want that in Arena.
Yeah. We kind of gave that thing kicking in the shins last episode.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so Arena score, I mean, two, just because are we maybe it'll be easier to get dragon cards. Actually, do you know the answer to this, Scott? Are they going to remove Goblins versus Gnome cards from Arena when they add in Blackrock Mountain?
I doubt it, and I think they've been
Okay.
rotating in the Blackrock Mountain cards as they're released on a weekly basis. I think it's just a bigger and bigger card pool, which
Okay.
means mech and dragon synergy cards are probably getting a little more diluted over time.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd say two, maybe even a one.
Yeah,
What do you
usually
think?
I knock at a point for being, half a mana off. This thing's a full mana off without its ability triggering. So yeah, one's not crazy, but I don't think a two is crazy either.
We're going to one because I am crazy, Scott.
All right. Well, yeah,
Wow.
actually, between being a whole man off and having badly balanced stats, that's probably pretty fair.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
What do you think constructed score, though?
This might be a five man because this might be the reason I'm going to a
Yeah.
dragon deck.
That's what I was gonna fight you if you didn't say five, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah, let's go there.
Yeah, is this our first five of the set? I think it is.
Think it is.
Yeah, first five. Woo!
All
Blackwing
right.
Corruptor, so good. All right, this is like so. I wasn't really sold on dragon decks when I was kind of looking at some of the dragon cards early on, but once I saw this card, I was like, I am definitely building a dragon deck. I'm in. All right, next one. Draconid, is that Draconid? Draconid
Dragonade Crusher.
Crusher.
Yep.
Six costs, 6/6, number of the devil, and it has flames on it in the golden version. Coincidence, Scott? I don't know. Battle cry. If your opponent has 15 or less health, which is not crazy at turn six, gain +3/+3, so a 9/9 for 6 mana. What?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I like it, man, and maybe it's just because I've played my share of like fast and aggro decks, but the signature to me of an aggro deck, I mean, you're going to get him down to 15 or less health. The question in those decks is whether or not you're going to kill him before you run out of steam. But you're running out of steam often around turn 6, 7, something like that. So if as a curve topper, you know, after like getting them low-ish, maybe to 10 health or maybe to, you know, 5 health, something like that. And I'm running out of steam, and my last attempt to like knock him down is to bring out a 9-9 for 6 mana way ahead of curve. Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah.
There are some ifs in there, and I will say that since I last, because when I hit legendary with Shokkaden, which was the aggro deck, and so I got a really good feel for aggro. Since then, there have been a little more taunt and a lot more healing added into the meta. You got things like anti-Keelbot, which just, man, that really, yeah. If somebody's running that, it just makes aggro really hard to deal with, or, you know, hard to win as aggro. You know, so in those cases, when somebody adds 8 health, they may not be below 15 anymore. But in my mind, if they're not running healing cards, you will, in a deck that wants to, you will be able to get them to 15 or less health by this turn, and especially hunter decks, right? Because they're hero power. If you're investing in that, if they're even close, you'll see on turn 4 or 5 if you're close, and you may just lean on your healing or your hero power more than you would have otherwise just to knock them below in order to get this thing out. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought, and then I will challenge your thinking.
Yeah, so, I mean, he is vulnerable to big game hunter, and I mean, it sucks, yes, but to me, like, something is in your deck. Unless you're saying that you want your whole deck to not be vulnerable to big game hunter, which is a strategy, but I just don't put a whole lot of stock in that.
Yeah, I don't either. That's playing way too much around one card that they may not even have in their deck.
Right, and they may not, and if it's in their deck, it may not be in their hand. And a lot of people who run it only run one, not two. And if you've got other cards that have more than, you know, 7 or higher attack, then I mean, it gets it out of their hand, and then your next one's safe. You know, so it sucks when things get big game hunted, but to me, that's just the cost of doing business. I don't build my decks around it.
So here's my question, Scott. So on the mid range Barbarian Warrior deck that was winning on the show a bunch. One of the lessons I learned from that deck was that in a face punch deck, you don't want any cards that don't have an immediate impact.
Yeah.
So I'm curious why in an aggro deck you would want to run this over like an Argent Commander or even a Reckless Rocketeer, just that you're guaranteed to get 4 or 5 damage on the face. Rather than, because I just feel like in an aggro deck, you throw down a 9-9, they're probably going to have something to just like remove it. And then you got nothing for it.
Well, I mean, you say they have to have something to remove it. They would have to have hard removal, or they have to trade a lot of their creatures into it, which is kind of okay because it kind of paves the way for either your other creatures to maybe live an extra turn and punch again, and or give you a chance to draw the rest of your cards in your deck, which, as you mentioned, will have immediate impact. Yeah. So for the most part, you're right. I guess I personally have a little more leeway for highly, highly cost-efficient cards in those decks.
Okay.
And that's what I see this. It's like, this is not only cost efficient, but this is super cost efficient.
Insanely cost efficient.
Yeah, and only in that deck, right? This is the deck that it wants to be in. And I don't know that we've had a whole lot of those cards before. Cult Master is another one that, to me, I sometimes rotate in those kind of decks because, you know, if I find myself sometimes needing to switch from face punch and do a just, you know, some efficient control. Yeah. And since most of the cards do have an effect the turn they come down, I can drop that Cult Master, you know, trade a couple of little weenie guys to kill, you know, do a little bit of board control enough to buy me some leeway, and then draw the cards that I just invested in that control right back. And then, you know, I might get some direct damage out of that or something.
Yeah, dude, I'm on board with that. Cult Master has been my Paladin MVP lately.
Yeah.
So you're trading your 1/1s that you got from your hero power for cards. It is awesome.
Yeah, I've been putting them in my Implock deck, which is my version of Demon Lock, but with kind of an emphasis on the weenie token guys.
Oh, cool.
Dude, I mean, you do an Implosion, and you got these 1/1s sitting around, and then, you know, Imp Gang Boss, and you know, you're getting some that way, and then the next turn, you play your Cult Master, and you trade all your Imps? Man, that's insane.
Dude, that's so good, because in Paladin, the thing I've come up against is people always want to clear the tokens because they're worried about the trainer guy, right?
Right.
But there's nothing like that in Warlock. They're happy to just let you keep your stupid 1/1s out there.
Yeah, there kind of is. I mean, I run the Demon Fire and the Demon Heart, but those can target any demons, and it doesn't have to be the Imps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so for Draconid Crusher, though, let's get back to this 9-9 for 6. Crazy. This is another one where, like, sure, if they silence it, it's still a 6-6 for 6.
Yeah.
So how high are you talking in arena?
I don't know. I'm seeing we have a 4 here. I don't remember how we arrived at that. I might be more inclined to call it a 3, because in arena, it feels like a little bit of a win more card.
Yeah.
Because if you're at parity and you're knocking each other's health down, that's kind of the best scenario. If you're behind, well, their health isn't going to be low enough to trigger it. And if you've got their health low and yours isn't low, well, then you're already ahead. And in those scenarios, the last thing you want to do is the last thing you need is a card that was in your deck only when you're ahead. So maybe a 3, because it is just slightly below the vanilla cost, but the trade-off is so big if it does fire.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go with 3 as well. It is common, which is going to be really nice in arena, because if you're building an aggro deck, you'll probably have the chance to grab this. Yeah. Also, the golden version is awesome, and there's like fire and rubble flying behind him. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it does look pretty badass.
As a side note. So gold score, 5. There you go. Constructed, though, 4? Do you even want to go as high as 5?
That's a good question. You know, the Alexstrasza combo we haven't talked about, but if you hold on to this thing and you play him out after Alexstrasza, they're guaranteed to be at 15 life or lower, so he'll always turn into a 9-9 in that scenario.
Aggro decks aren't running Alexstrasza, though, are they?
No, well, that's true. And that would be more of a dragon deck than an aggro deck scenario. But, I mean, it does kind of broaden his use a little bit. And it is kind of a deterministic two-card combo with a card that, I mean, yeah. To me, both cards are decent on their own. And you play them together, and that's pretty amazing. I would say I haven't had a chance to play with this guy yet. So I actually don't know if he warrants a 5 or not.
All right, I say we settle on 4, because I am not sold on 5 yet.
Oh, okay, here we go.
Sold. All right, awesome, 4. All right, next card. Oh, man, this guy. Card. Everybody knows the scores already, but let's talk about him. Emperor Thorisson.
Thorisson?
Sorry, Emperor. Yeah, Thorisson, that sounds good. 6 cost, 5/5. At the end of your turn, reduce the cost of cards in your hand by 1. Some cards are very fun, but not good, right? We talked about a couple of those today. Some cards are very good, but not fun, just plain vanilla. This is one of those very rare cards that absolutely max out both meters. It's super fun because it gets you crazy combos, and it's super good because it gets you crazy combos. and it's still, I mean, it's a 5/5 for 6. It's not a terrible body. I love this card.
Yeah, he's just not a terrible body. I mean, he is a mana and a half off on stats. I mean, like, I think it's worth it, and I think it's a very good card. But I guess he still has a body of substance, but it's not a cost-efficient body on its own.
Sure, that is very true. But it's not like, you know, the mini mage or something like where it's just like so flimsy and so dangerous just getting it for the effect.
It's true. I mean, this is, you know, it's a low feb body. It's a 5/5 on the body is going to be noteworthy. There's not too many things that can trade with it with impunity and still live. You talk to a lot of people, and to them, this is, I feel like the community response to this is a lot like low feb. Which is where I look at it at both cards, and I say, yeah, these are above average. These are good cards. I probably think Thorisson is better than I think Lotheb is, but there are people who just think Lotheb is like the standout card of Naxxramas, which I've literally never built a deck with Lotheb in it. And some people out there, I'm sure, are gasping and fanning themselves. What?
Somebody just crashed their car.
That's it. They're just rage quitting. They're like, I'm not listening to this guy anymore. And I'm not saying Lotheb's bad, and I don't know if that's the right call. I do think Thorisson's better than that. And actually, I've already put him in a deck or two, but I haven't had those scenarios that just make me say, holy crap, this is the second coming. And if you top deck him, the ability's worthless. He's just an overcosted minion, right? Yeah. If you're in like an aggro or faster paced decks, which admittedly a lot of mine are, not all of them, but a lot of mine are, and that's probably why he's not as good in a lot of my decks that I've got in my rotation right now. He's just not good in aggro or fast paced decks. Mid range, I think he's moderate. It's really control and combo decks where he excels, and I don't have a whole lot of high cost control and combo decks. But that is where he shines for sure.
Yeah, I agree. He has its place, right? But the thing I love about it is when you play him, you know what you're going to get. Because it's not at the start of your turn. Right. Which if they were going to nerf it, that's what I would expect, right? Similar to Nat Pagel, right? Because you play this guy, you immediately know what's going to happen to your hand. So you can decide, make that decision and not let's throw it down and wait and see what they do and maybe I'll get that effect to proc. As always, and if you're holding even two cards in your hand, essentially right there, and Scott, correct me if this math is not correct, but I view that as this guy essentially costing 4 for a 5/5. Is that reasonable to do it that way?
Yeah, I mean, that is pretty close. There's a lot of scenarios where, I mean, what if you could have just cast those two cards next turn anyway, right? There's a lot of cases where it may not matter, but for the most part, if you've got at least two cards in your hand, then he kind of breaks even at 2, give or take, maybe slightly ahead at 2. And then the more cards you have, the better. I think where it really shines is when you have cards that are like 8 plus mana, or maybe if you can coin or innovate this guy out earlier, you know, anything, basically any cards that you can cast on earlier turns than you would have, I think that's where he shines. Also, when you can play combos either sooner than you could have, or just that you couldn't have otherwise cast, those are to me the scenarios where he really, really shines.
Yeah.
Dumping just a bunch of random cards from your hand on the board faster can be good. It can also be overcommitting, and you know, AoE might punish you for that. I still think that's probably, you know, good thing to do to be able to flush your hand faster. But to me, that's not just some like magic dream scenario that's going to translate into wins all the time.
Yeah. For me, it's more. It doesn't mean that you can play more cards next turn. It means you can hold those cards and they keep getting cheaper, right? Until you hit a point where when it's time to turn on the gas, you can turn on the gas as high as you want.
Yeah, sure. And again, that comes back to you're talking about a deck with a lot of more expensive cards or that rely on a lot of combo interactions. And yes, those are the decks where that really matters.
All right, Scott, I'm making a bold claim and you can fight me against it. I'm even going to say an arena. This guy's a 5.
I might buy that. 5 feels a little aggressive for me, but Arena is sort of an awkward format where people don't have answers to everything in their hands and people don't have finely tuned decks. And so I think in those decks, he's a little likely to live a little longer. Yeah. Also, in Arena, decks tend to be spread out over the mana spectrum. And so you are more likely in pretty much any given deck to have cards that can benefit from him, from playing him, you know, after you cast him. So it feels like nearly any deck would take advantage of him, and it feels like he is more likely to live around and have more aggregate cost impact than he would in most decks.
Yeah, and I mean, there are other good 6-cost legendary minions that you could have when you're picking an arena, like Karen Bloodhoof and stuff like that.
Or Sylvanas, yeah.
And Sylvanas, yeah. But you could also be offered Gelban Mechatork or the Beast or Toshli, which is those are all, you know, okay, but I would definitely take this guy over them.
See, and those two are interesting comparisons because admittedly I haven't played as much with this guy as I'd like, and I haven't played with him in optimal decks for his skill. But I mean, when I look at him, I'm like, yeah, that's a good effect, but I think I'd rather have a Karen or a Sylvanas personally.
Yeah.
I mean, Sylvanas can be nuts. Sylvanas, if you do the math, can be a 3-for-1, right? Because let's say you have 3 5/5s and I cast one, which is my Sylvanas. I kill one of them with my Sylvanas. I take your second one and I use that to kill your third. All from one card. That can be a 3-for-1. Emperor Thorason's not giving you card advantage, right? He's just helping you cast things a little faster or sooner than you could have otherwise. And so, that was a dream scenario with Sylvanas that I outlined, but I mean, she's just capable of a lot more. And I think even her default case is often pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, she can be silenced and then her text does nothing, where this guy's text will always do at least one thing.
Yeah, true.
I could be talked down to a 4. Are you saying you'd feel better with a 4?
I will follow your lead on a 5. All I'm saying, you know, like there are strong, like, oh my God, hell yes, 5s. And then they're like, it's barely a 5. I would call this barely a 5 if a 5.
All right. That's a deal. And then constructed, we're going hell yes, 5, right?
I do. My gut says, and I haven't had this firsthand yet, but my gut says that the decks that want this guy are going to get really good mileage out of him. Being able to cast, you know, high end, super expensive cards one or two turns faster. Also, combo decks being able to execute faster and more decidedly than they could otherwise. That feel, I mean, it's a unique ability in the game. It really helps those decks. Yeah, I think it's five.
All right. Let's talk about another card that I'm going to try and talk you up to higher scores than you're comfortable with. Volcanic Drake. This is a 6-cost, 6/4. Eek those stat allocations. But it's a dragon and has costs one less for each minion that died this turn. So just a reminder, this only works on minions that die during your turn, right? Not because you can't play it during your opponent's turn. But if you make one trade where you kill one of yours, kill one of theirs, you've got a good card, right? A 6/4 for four. And it's not hard, at least for me, Scott. It's not hard for me to picture this working insanely well for classes that have solid AoE removal that they're playing anyways, like Mage, right? What do you think?
Yeah, AoE, I think, is the scenario that, or it's the deck type that's likely to get the most mileage out of it. So a couple of problems. These do tend to be win more cards. I think this class of cards that get cheaper for minions that died. And the reason I say that is if your opponent is killing all of your minions and wiping your board on their turn, then you never get the cost reduction of this. You have to have guys alive on your turn to trade if you're relying on minion trading to get the cost reduction, right?
Yeah, that's not win more though. That's stable or win more, just not losing.
Okay, fair enough. Although cards that help you catch up when you're behind, I would argue, are the most valuable.
Well, Scott, I'm just never behind, so that's never a problem for me.
I'll remember that next time you play.
Yeah, the next time you beat me.
Yeah. There's also, I don't, yeah, sure, if two minions died, you do get the cost reduction, and he is slightly profitable at that point, but I mean he's kind of in Lost Tall Strider territory, right? He's the suboptimal configuration of higher attack and lower
Yeah.
health. And so that, like, if this were a 4/6, I'd be much warmer on him than a 6/4. And I really wish that I could just flip those stats.
Me too. Yeah, I would love that too. So how about this, Scott? Remember not too long ago when you're talking about, oh man, that imp deck with that cult master.
Yeah.
Imagine if you could do that and then play this for two mana or whatever next turn.
Right.
What? You could play, or sorry, you could play Cult Master and then play this for two mana. What?
No, so I am behind you on that. And the
All
AoE
right.
decks, because it's sort of in your control, and even if you're behind, you can still cast those things to clear out a board. In fact, they'll have greater effect when you're behind.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite use, and to me, the most interesting and reliable use of this card. The second most reliable use of this card would be in like a minion token weenie deck, just like the imp deck, like the paladin deck that brings out lots of weenies. That some of them, there's so many, some of them are probably going to live to the next turn, and then you can start trading. Possibly even decks with a fair amount of taunt that can protect those types of things. Or like in a shaman deck, we bring out totems that a lot of times people like let live, and then maybe bring out a flame tongue and or something like that and use
Yeah.
them on offense. So there are some situations, but in the average deck, I think it's going to be hard to construct scenarios where he's super strong. I guess in Arena there's going to be a lot of trading, but yeah, I don't know. He just doesn't seem like a reliable card. And again, when he's a 6/4 instead of a 4/6, I'm like, why did I work so hard for that?
All right, that's fair. So I kind of agree in Arena, right? Because I think you need to plan for this card, or at least have a plan that is compatible. You're not planning around this
Yeah.
card, but a plan that is compatible. So Arena can at least get you to a three. All right, three. Constructed, four, right? Because this is clearly not a five, but we can reach for four.
I think
Okay.
that if you build the right deck around him, he will probably do his job. And you're probably combining with other cards the same effect that costs less for each minion that died.
I would never recommend building a deck just for this card. But I think there are lots of other good cards that can take advantage of your minions dying and stuff like that it works.
Yeah, Mage has the 4 damage class spell. Paladin has a new draw spell based on this, and Paladin's a good place for this effect, I think. I think Warlock can make good use of it, and Mage too, because Mage has all the AoE. Yeah, there's some real potential in those classes.
Awesome. All right. We're getting close to the end, Scott. Only a few more. Rend Blackhand. Legendary. 7 cost, 8/4. You like that 6/4 stat allocation? How about an 8/4, Scott? Yeah. But he comes with a battle cry. If you're holding a dragon, destroy a legendary minion. So destroying a legendary minion is awesome, as long as it's not Sylvanas.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So would you rather have this guy, or would you rather have a big game hunter that already kills most legendaries without the dragon claws and without 7 cost? Because they have the same ratio of stat allocations, right? Like, big game hunter's a 4/2. This is an 8/4.
Yeah.
And I think that's on purpose, by the way. I think that Blizzard says that if you play a card that can kill something meaningful on the opposing side, they don't want that, you know, the minion that you bring in to be able to live forever. They want that to be fragile.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think in almost every case I would want Big Game Hunter, right? Because it can kill way more than legendaries too. And it's cheaper, where you could bust a Big Game Hunter out on turn 3 if they cheese something out early. And this guy is just going to sit in your hand forever.
Right, and the legendaries you care most about are going to be 7 attack or more anyway. I mean, not all of them, but most of them. There's like Foe Reaper and Cairn and Sylvanas and Hogger. I mean, there's some down there, but most of them are the Ragnaroses or the Dr. Boons or whatever.
Yeah.
And I would much rather have the one condition of just they have to have a legendary in order for that to have effect than you have to be holding a dragon too, which, remember what we talked about earlier, we said on turn 5 it's not so big of a deal that you have to be holding a dragon, but on turn 7... it's a bigger deal.
Yeah.
You still have to be holding a dragon.
That's a big deal. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I naturally kind of compare this guy to the Black Knight, too, which is 1 mana less for a 4/5. Which, honestly, I don't mind those stats much worse than an 8/4.
Right.
And that one destroys a minion with taunt. I'm not sure what I would pick between those two. I mean, they're pretty equal to me. And that's 1 mana cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't have the condition of the dragon thing, right? So it goes in a wider variety of decks. You don't have to worry about sometimes in the deck that you put it in that it just won't work. And you're making suboptimal plays, like holding on to dragons that you wanted to play so you can kill the thing. I mean, it's just, to me, this has so many like ifs around it. If you're holding a dragon, if they have a legendary, if you have 7 mana that you can afford to spend and not do other things on your turn. I just lose interest in my attention moves on. I doubt I will ever play this card except maybe in a PvE encounter that, you know, where this thing can shine.
Yeah, I think I mostly agree. I think when it works, I think it can absolutely win you a game, right?
Sure.
In the right scenario, it's going to be awesome. But it's so hard to make it work, and I think it's going to not work much more often than it will.
Right.
Especially Arena, right? This is... it's not a zero, because it is still a body. Right,
yeah,
but
yeah.
They're not going to have a legendary minion. So you're paying 8/4 for, or sorry, you're paying 7 for an 8/4.
I'd give it a 1. Personally.
I guess that's a 1. Yeah.
I mean, it's like an even more overpriced Core Hound at that point, right?
Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe it's a 0 in Arena. It's really bad.
It is pretty bad because your opponent's not likely to have a legendary. You're not likely to have a dragon.
Yeah, it's a 0. It's a 0 because you wouldn't. If there was just a minion that was just an 8/4 for 7, you wouldn't play it.
Well, yeah. So, where would this be? This is like a mana and a half overpriced, but with suboptimal stat balance
with
stats.
Really suboptimal stats.
Yeah, it is really bad.
This thing dies to a Chilwind Yeti. I mean, it dies. It almost dies to a Raptor, a 2-cost minion.
Yeah. Yeah, 0/0/1 anywhere in there. I mean, I won't be playing it either way. How's
that? I'm giving it 0, Scott. We're going extreme today.
All right.
Constructed is probably more right. That you're much more likely to run into legendaries. You can make sure you have the dragons.
Yeah. Well, still you can make sure you have a deck with dragons.
Yes. Yes, that's
whether
true.
Whether or not you have one that you've been holding on to cast after turn 7 is a different deal.
You can at least put the odds in your favor.
Yeah.
But it's not solid value, which is our definition for 3. I would say maybe it's a 2, which is acceptable backup plan or niche filler. Yeah.
I put it at 2. But, I mean, to me that means in most decks you probably won't be running it. Maybe somebody will prove us wrong and, you know, it'll turn out to be worthwhile. But I doubt it.
Yeah, unlikely. All right, Cro-Magus, one of the super fun fights, I thought, in WoW, when you take this guy on. It's really fun to go back and solo it as a rogue, too. But anyways, the card is an 8, cost 6/8. Okay. And whenever you draw a card, put another copy into your hand. Okay. I'm going to crazy town, Scott, again. This card is so good. I think this is maybe one of those cards that I'm overvaluing because it is my playstyle, right? I love control. I love card draw. That's all I want. I think all it takes is one proc and you get value, right? You're drawing a card. If you have card draw minions on the table or your warlock, right? Just use your hero power right afterwards on turn 2 and draw 2 cards or on turn 10. Sorry.
Yeah.
You can get a lot. I think it's much easier to get value on the turn you drop it than it looks like initially. Because even stuff that gives you spare parts, right? Get 2 spare parts instead of 1.
Doesn't that count as draw. Yeah, I was going to say, it has to be count as draw. But I hadn't thought of some of the cards that you can have on the board. You know, things like Acolyte of Pain or those sorts of cards.
The crazed loot hoarder guy.
Yeah. So there's some potential there that I hadn't thought about. In my mind, this guy is this set's version of Kel'Thuzad, because they're both 8 cost. They're both 6 eights. Kel'Thuzad sort of clones creatures, right? Puts them directly into play. You don't have to cast them, but they don't get their battle cry effect. This guy sort of clones cards that you draw. There's a number of pluses and minuses in both directions. I think between the two, I like Kel'Thuzad because it feels like he can have a much stronger impact the turn he comes into play. Although he does have requirements on the board being indecent. Like, you have to have stuff on the board for him to be worth a darn. So if you were already at a disadvantage in losing, that's not great. But Cro-Magnus has to live through a full turn in order to have any effect, unless you've got some shenanigans queued up on your turn.
Yeah.
Let
me read you a few cards, Scott. Just to see what you think.
Yeah.
Tracking. Blessing of Wisdom. Northshire Cleric. Power Word Shield. Shiv. Manatide Totem. Mortal Coil. Slam. What? These are all cards you can do on the same turn.
Well, here's the downside. Most of those you have to cast on the same turn, which means you have to have more mana above and beyond the 8, right? Not all of them. Like, Acolyte of Pain could have been out already, and then you just smack them into something, and suddenly you get the extra card. And you're right, you're onto something. And hey, if you're using Thorisen, then suddenly the whole thing gets a lot more palatable. I really like Kel'Thuzad, and I find that, you know, when I build a deck, I often put in, you know, 26 to 28 cards, and then for the last couple, I kind of look, okay, what are the generic legendaries that I think are going to, or the neutral legendaries that are going to fit particularly well in this deck? And I noticed Kel'Thuzad putting himself in a lot of my decks, because he's just like, I think he's amazing, honestly.
Yeah, he's one of the few cards in the game that can completely turn around a game by itself. That one card, just suddenly you are winning.
Yeah, and he's got one of the biggest, like, enemy concede when I play him rates of any of the cards that I run in my decks. And, I mean, you know, they only concede in the scenarios where he really did tilt the game, but he can take a game that looked like it was at parity and just win it for you. Win it on the spot. Cro-Magnus, I don't think he'll have that same effect on the spot. Like, I can't imagine you casting him, people are like, well, that's it, game's over. I lost my whole board state, and, you know, I can't kill it, and so therefore I just might as well concede now. They're like, no, my opponent will get a small incremental advantage over time, and he's got a big body on the board to deal with. But a lot of cards meet that description. So I think he's a little, in my mind, I like him. I want to be clear, I like this guy, but I think he's a little below Kel'Thuzad all in.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I still love him. Also, you want to talk Crazy Town? Divine Favor? What? Sorry, I'm just going through Hearthstone now and reading all the draw cards.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Arena score. I think he's actually really solid in Arena. Because by the time you're dropping cards like this, you're usually both top decking. Mm-hmm. The chances that they've kept a removal card in hand that can deal with a 6/8 is pretty low. So I think he's actually pretty good in Arena. I'd say a 4.
Yeah, I agree with that. The 6-8 stats, see, like, this is the kind of stat balance I like to see on cards. And
Yeah.
especially if the card is the type that gives you incremental value the longer he lives, you know, like every turn he's in play, he gives you more value, which this guy does. That's where I want to see, you know, doubly so. I want to see the higher toughness over the higher attack. And he's got it. So, yeah, I think in Arena, the turn you cast him, he is unlikely to die before you get to start a turn with him. You're likely to draw one full card that should basically make up the mana premium you paid for him and then some, possibly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think in Arena, he's a very solid pick. I would put him above average, and I think 4 is the right place for him.
All right. I think in Constructed, he's probably actually a 4, but kind of for different reasons. Because yeah. it's probably not going to last as long, but you can probably get more out of him on the first turn in Constructed.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly what I would have said. And not that it's the biggest thing in the world, but that 6 power also does keep him out of big game hunter range. So it does yeah. mean a lot of decks, he's less likely to just disappear.
Yeah. Yay, Cro-Magus.
Yeah.
Cool, dude. I think he's like I kind of mentioned, he fits my playstyle perfectly. I think that's the card I'm most excited about that's come out so far.
Cool.
All right, Major Domo Executus. What a weird card. A 9 cost. 9. There, it is hard to get to make me excited about any 9 cost card. I mean, Gruul is even 8. Come on. Yeah. But 9 cost. 9/7. So, I mean, hey, decent stats. Death Rattle, replace your hero with Ragnaros the Fire Lord, which basically immediately sets your health to 8, but gives you the hero power, a die insect? I think it's the one that's used in the challenge, which is 2 cost, deal 8 damage to a random enemy, which can be a minion, can be the hero. So, I don't know, what do you think?
I think that 9/7 is suboptimal stats. I think he's... You know, he doesn't have the stats that you would expect to have a vanilla creature for his cost. And I think that I don't want to be taken down to have 8 life. And I say down because the odds that I'm going to have less than 8 life and that this is somehow healing me feel very low.
Yeah.
I mean, there is, I guess, a dream scenario where, I was like, oh, you could sacrifice him on your turn. And then if your opponent doesn't have any creatures on the board, then you can use it to deal 8 to their face. It's like, or you could have just attacked with this guy and done 9 to their face, in which case he wouldn't have died. He's just so weird. And I like that he exists, and thematically he's super, super awesome. And I don't even understand why he exists, though, because he's such a trap and he's such a liability. And when you switch to Ragnaros, by the way, my understanding is that 8 life is your maximum, so you cannot heal yourself. You could, in theory, play Alexstrasza on top of it to set your life to 15, I believe.
Yes, but that is correct.
You can't heal yourself, but then you're talking about on a different turn, because you're talking about super expensive legendaries, and why are you running some... It just doesn't feel like it works. You can give yourself armor or ice block or something like that when you're in Ragnaros form, but I believe when you shift to Ragnaros form, all of your secrets of that type wouldn't have triggered and will disappear on the transition, which means you have to cast them after you've switched. And again, that's a huge liability. So I'm not interested. I don't think I'll ever play this guy, ever.
Yeah.
I will probably play him in a PvE encounter where he's the right tool for the job at some point.
Yeah, the only place I could possibly see this working is in Warrior. You don't keep your armor when you transition to Ragnaros, but you can build new armor after it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could kind of bolster up, but it's like you're talking turn 10, essentially the opponent's turn 10. At that point, 8 health, they're just going to one-shot you. It's not like you're going to like be fighting and holding it. It's either you're still alive or you're dead.
Right, yeah.
It's scary, man.
And you're not going to be armoring up from your hero ability because you just replaced it.
Yeah. I mean, if you had coin, you could play this guy or you couldn't even trade. I mean, you don't want to sack him right away.
If you have to start any defense of him, where if you had your coin on turn 9,
that is a good point. All right, yeah. All right, I got nothing. Like, I agree completely with what you said, where it's flavorful. I'm glad he exists, but. I mean, let's just run Kel'Thuzad for 1 mana less and get tons of value without potentially killing yourself.
Yeah.
All right. So Arena, I mean, it's still a 9-7 for 9. I mean, I guess that's a fine topper in Arena. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a 2. Yeah, it's a body, and if he does manage to die, you'll start lobbing some fireballs around. That could be fun. And the good news is if you don't hit your opponent in the face with the 8, I mean, you're going to help with board control, and that might keep you alive long enough to... because in Arena especially, the idea that they're going to have a deck that's like poised to pounce with like charge minions or direct damage. I mean, the way you deal damage to your opponent is usually by getting board control and, you know, dealing damage that way. So that is the upside, is that by the time that this guy has died and you've lobbed at least one random 8 damage effect on the board, you're probably going to be able to maintain board.
Yeah, and there's a lot of 6 attack minions out there that this guy can trade with and still kind of hang around on the board for a little while.
And by the way, that was all in defense of him not being a 1 or a 0 in my mind. I still think he's average.
Yeah, we're not going crazy. I agree. He's a 2. Constructed, I mean, maybe... He's got to still be a 2, right?
I guess. Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine saying a 2. I don't think I'll play him. And a 9-7 for 9 with a cool effect isn't, I mean, it's just not that bad.
I think we got to give him a 2 for Constructed for the fun factor. We didn't talk about fun being in our rating, but this is going to be a really fun card. I'm going to play it just so I can get Ragnaros. I want to see the effect and see what my opponent says and that sort of stuff in emotes. And then I want to use this hero power and just murder something. I have to do it at least once.
Yeah. All right.
All right, last card. Boom, Scott, surprise. It's card of the week. It's time to sing.
Card of the week.
Don't sound too excited, Scott there. Wow.
Actually, yes. I am excited this week because, you know, I've got a cold this weekend.
Yeah.
I decided to turn that to my advantage for this week's card of the week song.
Okay. All right, interesting.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, hit me with it.
All right, let's see if this works here. Okay, hold on. Oh, yeah. That's right. You know what time it is. It's that time we all been waiting for. It's the time for the card. Not just any card, baby. The card of the week. Yeah, that's right. Card of the week.
Right. That's
what I got.
Incredible. We got the sensual Hearthstone going on over here now.
Yeah.
Oh, that I knew you had prepared something, Scott, but I was not ready for that. That was amazing. You're embracing the deeper tones of your sick voice. I love it.
Oh yeah. That's right.
I want you to read the rest of or not read, but say the rest of your comments about this card in that voice.
Well, I can read Nefarian that way if you'd like.
Oh, you know I do. Go.
He's a 9 mana cost 8/8 dragon. And when he comes on the board, his battle cry gives you 2 random spells to your hand. And not just any spells, but those from your opponent's class. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You had a bit of a southern accent going there.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's good. Hey, we just know you think southern accents are sexy now. That's cool.
That's it.
Good to know. All right, Nefarian, 2 cards? And an 8/8 for 9 mana? Heck yes! I don't really care too strongly what those spells are, right? Like, I think you mentioned, or we were talking in the show ahead of time, you know, there are some class cards that are pretty bad. But even if one of those cards is good, an 8/8 for 9 mana that gives you a card, love it.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we look at, you know, I normally say card is worth 2.5 to 3 mana. Now that's the caveat there is that's assuming that's a card that A was good enough that you would pick that you would want to use it, and B that it synergizes with your deck and helps promote your deck concept, right? Getting a random card, so not only is it not guaranteed to synergize with what you're doing, but the fact that it's probably from another class means it's probably that much more off base. And then, you know, go start flipping through the you know, just random class cards, and yeah, a lot of them are good and a lot of them are bad. So and it's not just minions, right? Because the minions tend to to me, the minions tend to be more universally good. Whereas the spells tend to be a lot more conditional. And there's just some bad ones or ones that must be used in specific combos to be worth a darn.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm just flipping through. It's like Shadow Step, Silence, Eye for an Eye, like Eek. Yeah, some of these are pretty bad.
Yeah, a lot of those like 0/1/2 cost class spells, people don't really use that often, and for good reason.
Yeah, because like Shadow Step is awesome if you're a Miracle Rogue. But you're probably not a Miracle Rogue if you're playing this card.
Yeah, although you could Shadow Step Nefarian and get two more.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyway, so I honestly, probably one of those cards is going to be pretty good. And so I do still think that this is a net positive. I just don't think it's amazing. And if it said, add, you know, draw two cards from your deck as a battle cry, I think that would have been way, way better. And I just want to make sure people are keeping that in perspective, that two random spells from your opponent's class, to me, is nowhere near as good as two cards from your deck. Also, this is a case where you're adding cards to your hand, you're not drawing them. So there are some rare circumstances where that matters.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, right, if this card was Battlecry, draw two cards, we would be blowing our brains out in excitement. But adding two random spells to your, even if those two cards add up to essentially one decent card, I mean, it's still, I think that's a great card. A 9 cost, 8/8. I mean, you're playing this when you're top decking and suddenly you have twice as many cards as your opponent does.
Yeah, and I agree with that, but I just wanted to keep it in perspective. Like, to me, this is ballpark of drawing one card, although it's got a lot of variance to it. Like, sometimes it's going to be really good, and sometimes it's going to be really bad, and you really have no way of knowing which it's going to be. And it'll be fun and interesting, and that's, I think, worth something in and of itself, not necessarily from a professional win more point of view, but, you know, it is fun to play with.
All right, you want to get outside the realm of realistic? Let's look at this first Hearthpwn comment, because this is hilarious. You play Nefarian, you get two unstable portals from the mage. You play those and get two Nefarians. You play those and get four unstable portals. You play the four Nefarians, get 8 Echoes of Medivh. And then you play those. Final result, they say here, 63 Nefarians with 126 card advantage. Boom! There you go.
I don't even know what's happening right now.
Argue with that, Scott. How is that not a 5? How is that not a 10? How do we not make a whole new scale for this card?
Yeah. All right, you got me, Josh.
I knew it. All right, so I agree. I think it's fun, but it's also a solid card. I think not to the same level as Emperor Thurisson, but I think it's to the same kind of point where I think this is a solid card that is also very fun to play.
Yeah. Now, I will say, this is, to me, one of the fairly rare circumstances where I would rate this card as being better in Arena than in Constructed. Because with the average card quality in Arena being lower, right, and the average like synergy quality in Arena being lower, that the value that he gives you from these random cards is more likely to be competitive and than the average card. And then the fact that he doesn't – I have a hard time seeing like what – his effect would synergize with. So normally cards have abilities that can combo with other things, so in Constructed they get that much better. But with Nefarian, I have a hard time figuring out combos with like Twilight Drake after turn 9. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So
all right, yeah. I agree. So what are you thinking for Arena? How high are we going?
I think I'd put him at a 4. The biggest issue is that, I mean, I think his, once you get to turn 9, he might even arguably be a 5 at that point, but the problem is you got to get to turn 9, right? He's got a really high cost, and it's going to be prohibitive, and he's going to be a dead card in your hand for most of the game. And if the game never got to turn 9, then he was only a liability. So any card with a casting cost this high, I mean, even 8 is pushing it, but 9 and 10 to me are really dangerous territory.
Okay, yeah, I'll agree, especially since I got Archmage Antonidas in Arena recently, and he's only 7 cost, and I had him in my hand every game and never got to play him.
Yeah,
it was, there you go. So, all right. So I'll agree with 4. So Constructed, he shouldn't go lower than a 3. He's still a solid card, I think.
Oh, yeah. I still think he's a solid card, but because he doesn't have that much like synergy, and because the cards are random, and because, frankly, most decks are built for synergy, I just have a hard time believing that at 9 mana he's going to like drive home the game in a way that some other high cost cards like this can.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's no Cro-Magus, if you will.
It's true.
All right. So, all right, so that's the review. Any final thoughts on the neutral cards, Scott, before we close out?
No, I like them. I think there's some cool stuff in here. You know, I mentioned I did go back and I looked at the Nax cards just to get a feel for, you know, how many of those ended up like sticking around and mattering. And it was shocking to me how many, it was even more than I thought when we did the set review, like more of them have stuck around. They're not like in every deck, but you still see them around and they still enable archetypes. And this, like that set had a lot of Death Rattle stuff going on, but a lot of those Death Rattle cards were, could stand alone and be used in other decks.
Yeah. Whereas like Web Spinner.
Yeah, exactly. And how many in Sludge Belcher, for example, but in this set, how many times did we say like this card is unplayable if you're not in a dragon deck? And that wasn't so much true. I mean, it was true for like Undertaker and in the other set, but that was about it. So yeah. I have a hard time believing that the cards in this set are going to like enable as many new archetypes or are going to like as many cards are going to just like live on their own to be as strong. Cause I just think it's a byproduct of them making this the dragon set.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of agree. But I'm curious now to find out, is every adventure going to have an egg card? This is what people want to know.
Touche. Good question.
Or no, are they going to get progressively worse every set?
Next time it'll be a 0-cost, 0/1 that when it dies gives you a 1/1 or something.
Yeah, and it'll be 0/0, so it just dies immediately.
That's actually kind of cool, because if you had like your Baron Rivendell or something in play.
Okay, you could force it.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go. So Dragon Egg might even be better if it had less stats.
That's awesome. It could trigger off your Cult Master automatically when you play it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See, I like the idea of a 0-cost that just automatically turns into something else, but you can leverage the death synergy right away.
Yeah. That's true.
That's an interesting card idea.
All right. There you go. That one's free for you, Blizzard. Yep. Straight from Happy Hearthstone. All right, we're taking no questions this week because we did all the review. Also, no one sent in questions. That's the bigger reason. If you have questions...
Well, now, hold on. You got a lot of questions, but for the potluck, right?
Oh, yeah. All right, so we got tons of stuff for the potluck. I'm super excited. All right, so you notice at the top of the show, Scott, it's episode 47. We got episode 50 just around the corner. I think that's... I'm going to try and do the potluck then.
Oh, cool.
But I'm toying around with the idea of maybe since it's 50, maybe trying to bring back multiple guest hosts and having like everyone on. What do you think about that?
Goodness. Well, it's going to be that will certainly be a potluck.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if maybe if we hold off, because we got, I'm looking at the list here, I probably got like 8 different great suggestions for the potluck from listeners. I'm wondering if we save that for potluck 3, and potluck 2 is all the guest hosts come back and everyone brings one thing, like a real potluck.
Cool. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. So, but yeah, we got lots of really cool stuff for the potluck, which I'm super excited about. Thank you, everyone who sent that in. We're going to be talking about all that soon. There's some really good questions here that actually I want to hear your thoughts on too. So I'm super excited. Yeah. But so if you have just a question, because potluck stuff is normally bigger, right? Bigger questions or bigger theories. Some people send in the deck list that they like. So if you just have a short question, send that in too. We'll toss that in the question for next episode. But let's look at a couple iTunes reviews as well that we got. Valley Kid says, awesome strategy for newbies to experts, 5 stars. What I like about this podcast, other than super nice and upbeat host, is that they really focus on Hearthstone strategy with tips for newbies to advanced tactics. Quote, Scott Lance, ! You got an exclamation point, buddy. Well
nice.
Done. He said, Valley Kid says, I feel like they are the, quote, meatiest of the Hearthstone podcasts. With tons of discussion on how to improve your game. A must listen for sure. P.S. Josh, I love the potluck idea. Valley Kid, I love your idea too. Thanks. So yeah, we're definitely doing the potluck. We got good answers for it, so I'm glad people did. And hopefully after we do the first one, we get more. Falana says, please, sir, more episodes. In a weird accent. 5 stars. I'm addicted to the game of Hearthstone, and this is my favorite Hearthstone podcast. The host is genuine and friendly, doesn't claim to be an expert, and doesn't apologize for not knowing something. That's true. I've never apologized for being ignorant in my life. That's not true. But that's why Scott is here, so he can shore up my ignorance. Makes this podcast easy to listen to. Then add in the useful information they share, and you have a winning formula. My only complaint is I would like to see episodes released more regularly and more frequently. I would, too, if my child was not growing at the rate of a Sasquatch.
We have fixed the regular problem.
That's true. Yeah, we are every 2 weeks, and it is it's every 2 weeks. And I've, like I mentioned on the last episode, we are booked through August or July, I think. So we are going to be regular. Scott is even here when he's sick to make sure that we aren't late. He's like, Josh, please, can we delay it a day? And I said, no, Scott, get on here and bring your sultry. I don't know. Well, who wrote that song? I was trying to remember the.
That was a Barry White song.
Barry White, thank you. Yeah. I kept wanting to say Barry Manilow, and I was like, it is not Barry Manilow.
No, those are different. Yeah,
those are very different people. All right. So that's the show. That is our review. We hope you liked it. We're going to do a similar format. At least we're planning to. If you don't like the format, let us know. Because we're going to do this format in a month from now for the class cards. So going through each of the classes and say what we think of those cards as well. We're going to have everything we talked about today, including links to all the cards, all that sort of good stuff, up on the blog, gamediplomat.com. Just click on Hearthstone at the top. You'll see it all. As always, we'd love to hear what you thought of the show. Let you know, let us know what you liked, what you didn't like, what you want to see different in the future. You can contact us at Google+, Happy Hearthstone. You can contact me at Twitter, at JAugustine. Or you can email directly, ajosh@outlook.com. Or just comment on the blog, gamediplomat.com. Or leave a review on iTunes. If you leave a review and you're not in the United States area, send me an email or a tweet or whatever. Just let me know what region you're in so I can helps me find it on iTunes, because you have to look at each region individually, which is kind of a nightmare. But do that. Leave a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show. Scott, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter at @slants76. It's S-L-A-N-T-Z 76. And I'm also on Hearthpwn as Slants. So I'm getting in the habit of posting all of my decks that are worth a darn over there. And I've also been posting the deck list for the heroics that I've been beating on DRM, if you're interested in seeing those.
Sweet. Awesome. Scott, thank you for being here, even though you're sick. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, it was a blast.
It was. It's really fun. I love these review episodes. Hope you guys, too. If you guys are listening and you like or don't like these, let me know, because I always think they're super fun, so I try and do them often. But let us know what you guys think. Scott, thanks again.
Yeah, man. See you next time around.
Yeah. And for everyone else, thanks again for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.